This is Gregory Majewski of Oakdale, Connecticut. You're listening to International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. It is Sunday, April the 28th. We thank you for joining us. My name's Sheldon. Jill is with me as usual. We thank you for tuning in. We have 30 minutes of news and information from the world of radio for you. We have stories from North America and quite a few international items out there for you on today's show. So we'll get right to it. We are closing in on the date for the 37th annual NASWA Winter SWL Festival. We've been telling you about this for the last few weeks. It's coming up on May the 10th and the 11th. In Fort Washington, Pennsylvania, at the Holiday Inn Express and Suites. That is for people who want to attend in person. It is just north of the city of Philadelphia. And there is a limit to the number of people who can attend in person. That number is 65. I believe they are approaching that number as we speak. So if you are planning on going and haven't registered yet, I would suggest you check it out as soon as possible, because if not, you may be shut out. Also, the same goes for the hotel rate. At a special rate was set up. There was a deadline for it, which we had told you about. It apparently was extended. We can't tell you for sure as of today's date whether the special rates still apply or not. You'd basically have to check in the registration details to see what the room rates will be. Important to note that if you are planning on attending, you have to pre-register. They will not be accepting walk-ins at the festival itself on May the 10th and the 11th. So very important if you want to be there in person that you register online beforehand. Now, for the rest of you who don't plan on going to the event in person but would like to participate, you can do so via Zoom, and you can register for that. There's no limitations on the number of people who can register on Zoom. All of the events taking place at the live event will be carried on Zoom, except for maybe some of the meals and things like that, obviously. But all of the forum presentations, all of that will be available on Zoom. Plus, we'll have a weekend-long hospitality suite open for people to meet and greet and converse with other people in attendance. So to get all the information about registering, the in-person registration fee is $45 US. The Zoom registration is $20 US. And you can do all of that through the website SWLFEST.com. Don't hesitate. It is coming up very, very quickly. May the 10th and the 11th, we hope to see some of you either there in person or on Zoom. We will be handling the Zoom hospitality suite. Jill and I, and probably Mickey Delmage from our CIDX group throughout the weekend. We will have an open meeting room on the Thursday evening on the 9th of May for the Zoom registrants, which will be sort of an icebreaker event. So that is, as we said, don't delay. Get your registration in as soon as possible.
In our first news item today, we have a surprise. I think everybody was extremely surprised to get this news item about MFJ that is ceases on-site production in Starkville, Mississippi. So this is via MFJ Enterprises. So dear fellow hams and friends, and that's dated April the 25th, it is with a sad heart as I write this letter. As many of you have heard by now, MFJ is ceasing its on-site production in Starkville, Mississippi on May 17th, 2024. This is also the same for our sister companies, Ameritron, iGain, Cushcraft, Mirage, and Vectronix. Times have changed since I started this business 52 years ago. Our product line grew and grew and prospered. COVID changed everything in business, including ours. It was the hardest hit that we have ever had, and we never fully recovered. I turned 80 this year. I had never really considered retirement, but life is so short, and my time with my family is so precious. I want to thank you all of our employees who have helped build this company with me over the years. We have many employees who have made MFJ their career for 10, 20, 30, and 40 years and more. We are going to continue to sell MFJ products past May 17, 2024. We have a lot of stock on hand. We will continue to offer repair service work for out-of-warranty and in-warranty units for the foreseeable future. Finally, a special thanks to all of our customers and our dealers who have made MFJ a worldwide name and a profitable business for so many years. You all are so much appreciated. Sincerely yours, 73's Martin F. Jew, K5FLU. So that was a surprise. And also, as we were talking just before the recording, you know, how many of these companies are, you know, on the edge because times have changed. Even this, you know, selling amateur radio equipment, it's probably the only way to survive this is probably to have something else to sell with it. And, you know, how many stores sell amateur radio equipment, but so many other electronics devices. So, and the big companies also that often have government contracts or professional contracts with businesses. So that helps them continue. But it's sad to see a well-known name. The first year of me listening to shortwave, probably have seen some MFJ stuff in some of the magazines, and sad to see that it's closing down slowly.
Yeah, they over the years, they merged in, you know, brought in another quite a few lines of equipment as some of the companies that you mentioned there. But it's not a real volume business. I mean, they had so many different products available, probably the biggest choice of products of any of the amateur radio suppliers out there. But as much as they seem to say that amateur radio is expanding and that there's more and more people getting into it, I'm still not totally convinced of that. And it's a very competitive business. There are not that many businesses selling the equipment out there. So, you know, people are shopping around, you know, and there's only so many people to go around buying the equipment. So I guess it's not all that surprising. It's just rather a sudden shock for something that's kind of always been there to suddenly be going away. So I guess it is a sign of the times. And as he explained in the release that they circulated, you know, a lot of people without losing their jobs after many, many years of service with the company, which is sad in itself. So there may be some sales coming up, I would imagine, if they've got a lot of stock and they want to start clearing some things. So I check out MFJ Enterprises and see if there are any goodies there you might want to grab hold of while you have the opportunity. Next, we come to a story out of Canada. Canada's Christian radio station off the air in Happy Valley, Goose Bay, following a fire. This comes from VOCM Radio, local news via Radio World. Canada's largest Christian radio station is off the air in Happy Valley, Goose Bay area because of a massive fire last Friday. The station repeater site was in one of the buildings that burned at the hangar on the five-wing base. John Murley, president of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Newfoundland and Labrador, says the replacement of the equipment will cost about $35,000, a lot for a volunteer-run church radio station that relies almost exclusively on donations. Lighthouse VOAR is heard across the province on a series of repeaters located in Marystown, Gander, Botwood, Lewisport, Grand Falls, Windsor, Cornerbrook, Deer Lake, Porto Basque, Happy Valley, Goose Bay, and Labrador City, Wabush. Broadcast engineer Brian Matthews is still assessing whether anything can be salvaged from the fire and is working on trying to locate a new antenna and transmitter for the Upper Lake Melville area. People can still listen through the station's website, lighthousefm.org, and anyone wishing to donate can do so online. So for those that don't know, you know, or are maybe used to hearing Canadian radio stations with a call letter of starting with C, the stations in Newfoundland were allowed to keep the V prefix, which they had used before 1949, when Newfoundland became the 10th province of Canada. So it's kind of unique that those stations are somewhat historic, maintaining the V call signs. V call signs are used in Canada for other non-broadcast stations, but these are a couple that still exist on the radio spectrum for broadcasting. So hopefully they can get things up and running again, but $35,000 for a volunteer-run station is going to be difficult to do.
Hopefully they might get something back up and running. Let's cross our fingers. So we have in our next item, the National Association of Broadcasters names Crystal Radio Award recipients. This is via Radio World. The National Association of Broadcasters named the recipients of the 37th annual NAB Crystal Radio Awards. The Crystals recognize stations for exceptional year-round commitment to community service. Winners were announced at the NAB show this week. There's KFI on AM in Los Angeles, California, KKBQ-FM Houston, Texas, KMVP-FM Phoenix, Arizona, KNDE-FM College Station, Texas, KSL-FM in Salt Lake City, Utah, WBZZ Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, WHPT-FM Tampa Bay, Florida, WJJY-FM Minneapolis, St. Paul, and WLBC-FM in Muncie, Indiana, and WNRP-AM in Pensacola, Florida. Hubbard Broadcasting's KSTP-FM in Minneapolis, St. Paul received the Crystal Heritage Award, which recognizes radio stations that have won 5 Crystal Radio Awards. 11 other stations have been so honored. So, congratulations. I mean, to get these awards is pretty cool, and hopefully other stations can also, you know, show their excellence in broadcasting at some point.
Yeah, particularly for community service is what they're being recognized for, which is something that's disappeared from a lot of radio stations. So I think that's really noteworthy that those stations have continued to serve their communities and are recognized for that, just for that fact. So good work on their part.
So what's happening with our sun? Well, our sun is very active. It has a lot of sunspots. I like the reference that Sheldon gave. It looks like the sun has the measles.
Exactly, yeah.
So we had a lot of near misses of coronal mass ejections, actually, this week. We did have some variable conditions due to a lot of flares, a lot of close to or into the G1 class geomagnetic storming. So there were some auroras visible across Canada and some northern U.S. states a few days this week. The sunspot number 196, the solar flux 167, and there's still quite a few spots to look at. AR3654 is one of them that could be a troublemaker for more flaring and coronal mass ejections. So hopefully conditions are not going to be too bad. But there could be some radio blackouts from time to time if there's any significant flares. But to witness all of this, well, you got to turn on the radio and listen.
This is Margie Barrett of Lansdowne, Pennsylvania, listening to the International Radio Report every Sunday morning at 10:30 on TKUT 90.3 FM Montreal.
And maybe some of you were tuning around your radio over the last week or so, trying to get some of those Italian Marconi Day stations. I hope some of you had good results. I did some listening yesterday, and I think I was experiencing some of those disturbances that you were talking about from the sun, because there were some on the spotting sites that said they were on the air, but I did not succeed in actually hearing any of them myself. So hopefully you've had a good opportunity to tune in some of those and maybe get that really neat certificate that they're putting out both for hams and for shortwave listeners. So our next story, we get into our international stories. And the first one is a Radio Free Europe affiliated journalist jailed by the Taliban. This comes from Radio Info Asia. According to a report by the Afghan Journalist Center, Habib-ur-Rahman Tasir, a local journalist associated with Radio Azadi and Radio Free Europe in southeastern Ghazni province, has been detained by the Taliban intelligence since April 6th and now has been transferred to the regime's prison. Tahzir was reportedly detained for preparing local reports for Radio Azadi. His smartphone was seized by the authorities and its content were checked without his consent. Another source in Ghazni province told the AFJC that Tahzir had faced pressure before his arrest, including being removed from a joint WhatsApp group of journalists and local officials. Radio Azadi, Radio Free Europe, and the Taliban have not issued any comments regarding this incident so far. Radio Azadi is based in Prague, the capital of the Czech Republic, and produces and broadcasts programs for Afghanistan. In December 2022, the FM frequency of Radio Azadi and Voice of America, both U.S. government-supported outlets, were suspended by the Taliban. 2 months later, the regime shut down the websites of these two media outlets, saying that they had repeatedly failed to adhere to the regime's press laws and violated journalistic principles. The AFJC expressed serious concern about Tahzir's continued detention and demanded his immediate and unconditional release. AFJC data shows that at least 59 journalists and media workers were arrested in the last solar year alone. The majority of these cases involve violations of Taliban media directives, which contradict the country's media laws.
Really sad to hear this. You know, we often forget about how dangerous it could be for journalists out there to be there and report on news for us. So hopefully it's not going to get worse. These are countries where, you know, freedom of speech is a hard thing to come by.
Yeah, we've had a lot of stories just in the last few weeks about, you know, media-related stories out of Afghanistan. So it seems that they continue on a downward slide right now. Hopefully things can turn around at some point in the near future.
So in our next story, the BBC World Service files urgent appeal to UN over abuse of national security and counterterrorism laws against BBC News Persian journalists. This is a BBC press release via the Association for International Broadcasting. The BBC World Service has submitted an updated complaint to its urgent appeal filed with the UN and requested urgent action. The action follows recent developments, including the publication of documents in late February 2024 by a hacking group, which appeared to reveal that a number of current and former BBC News Persian journalists were convicted in absentia by a court in Tehran in February 2022 for propaganda against the Islamic Republic. This comes after sanctions were imposed on Iranian officials by the UK and US in January this year for threats towards Iranian journalists in London. The updated complaint was sent to five special procedure mandate holders with whom it was first filed in December 2020 and updated in February 2022. The Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of the Right to Freedom of Opinion and Expression, the Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Islamic Republic of Iran, the Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary or Arbitrary Executions, the Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women, Its Causes and Consequences, the Working Group on Arbitrary Detention. The new complaint also addressed for the first time to the Special Rapporteur on the Promotion of Protection of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms While Countering Terrorism, citing the relevance of historic and recent events to this UN Special Rapporteur's mandate, including the sanctioning of BBC News Persian by Iran, as well as the mass national security criminal investigation of BBC News Persian staff and the associated asset freeze. In the appeal submitted on behalf of the BBC by counsel for BBC News Persian, Gallagher KC and Jennifer Robinson, and presented by them as extremely urgent, the UN experts are requested to issue is a new communication to Iran, raising both Iran's inadequate response to their previous communication in 2022 and the recent developments, and a public joint statement from UN experts condemning the ongoing targeting and harassment of BBC News Persian journalists. Lillian Landor, director of BBC World Service, says recent developments have amplified the severe situation facing our BBC News Persian staff on a daily basis. They are being penalized for their journalism and professionalism. As we look to World Press Freedom Day next month, we are urging UN experts to robustly condemn the Iranian authorities' harassment and to hold the regime to account. Michelle Stanistreet, NUJ General Secretary, said journalists must not be targeted for doing their job, speaking truth to power and covering the news without fear or favor must be the cornerstone of journalism. But BBC News Persian and other Iranian journalists are today suffering for doing just that. We fully support this intervention from the BBC and encourage the UN to exercise its influence to bring safety and justice for Iranian journalists and their families who are targeted so heartlessly. Gallagher KC and Jennifer Robinson said, Iran's abuse of national security and counterterrorism laws against the BBC and the convictions in absentia for BBC News Persian journalists for the propaganda against the state for their independent reporting on Iran are designed to intimidate and silence the BBC's journalism about Iran. It must stop. We call on the UN to denounce these unlawful actions in the strongest possible terms. You know, once again, another way where there's intimidation and they're trying to, you know, do all sorts of action to make sure that the least amount of information comes out of Iran. And it's an ongoing war with all the journalists and all the freedom of speech once again.
Yeah, the BBC News Persian that they refer to is actually part of the BBC's World Service. So it's not heard just in Iran, but those broadcasts go out to the world via the World Service. So Persian speakers or Farsi speakers anywhere can tune in and hear those broadcasts. We move next to the Voice of America. A new director has been named at the Voice of America. This is from the U.S. Agency for Global Media in a press release via the Association for International Broadcasting. The U.S. Agency for Global Media has named Michael Abramowitz as the new director of the Voice of America. Abramowitz is currently president of Freedom House, a nonpartisan organization that works to create a world where all are free, and will succeed VOA acting director John Lipman later this year. Michael is an esteemed journalist and a champion for human rights, and much of his work at Freedom House has informed our own efforts to counter disinformation and authoritarianism around the world, said USAGM CEO Amanda Bennett. I'm excited for his leadership and eager to work alongside him to bring objective news and information to the world's most restrictive media environments, especially at such a critical point in our global history.
And in more VOA news, Voice of America launches new FM radio station in Rwanda. So this is from March 28th of Voice of America News. Voice of America has launched its second FM radio station in Rwanda. It is broadcasting to Karongi, a district of more than 375,000 people. The new station will offer a mix of programming catering to the many ethnic groups that call Rwanda home, including in Kirundi, French, Swahili, and English, as well as the Kinyarwanda language spoken by the majority of Rwanda's population. So this is good news, a little outlet for more information.
Yeah, Voice of America does a lot of this in different parts of the world with FM outlets in the country, so local people can listen on local radio. And then, of course, the international service, the Voice of America, which does have a lot of programming to Africa as well.
So we have upcoming ham radio contests.
It's going to be a busy weekend coming up if you're a ham radio contester and would like to participate in one or more of these events, starting with the MIE33 contest sponsored by NTV Television, Mie Prefecture, Japan, and Japanese Amateur Radio League. It is 2300 Zulu May 4th to 0300 Zulu May 5th. Each amateur band allowed in Japan, except for the Wark bands, which is 160 through 2 meters and down even. So this is really covering all of the major bands, as well as VHF, UHF. And it is all modes, CW, SSB, and FM, not digital, though.
There's the Association of Italian Radio Amateurs DX contest coming up, 1200 Zulu, May 4th to 1159 Zulu, May 5th. The bands are 10 through 80 meters, no work bands, and it is CW, SSB, and RTTY.
The Central Oregon DX Club is holding the 7th Call Area CUSO Party, 1300 Zulu May 4th to 0700 Zulu May 5th. The 7th Call Areas cover Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Nevada, Montana, Wyoming, Utah, and Arizona. The bands 160 through 10 meters, CW, SSB, and RTTY are the modes.
There's the Indiana CUSO Party, 1500 Zulu May 4th to 0300 Zulu May 5th, sponsored by the Uzier DX and Contest Club. Bands 160 through 10 meters without the work bands, and modes are SSB and CW.
The Delaware CUSO Party, sponsored by the First State Amateur Radio Club, is running 1700 Zulu May 4th to 2359 Zulu May 5th. That is also 160 through 10 meters and no work bands. That one is SSB, CW, and digital modes.
And finally, the New England CUSO Party, 20 hours Zulu May 4th to 2359 Zulu May 5th, sponsored by the New England Amateur Radio Clubs. Bands are 80 through 10 meters, SSB, and CW.
So if you're ham chasing a lot of the different U.S. states, maybe trying to get stations in every state, that might be a good weekend, next weekend, for some of the states that don't have a lot of amateur radio activity. They should be out on the bands for all those different CUSO parties taking place. So you should check those out.
And we are out of time.
We thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our email address is radioreport@yahoo.com. Our show live streams and is archived at ckut.ca, the CKUT website here in Montreal. Our Facebook group, International Radio Report, we want to welcome Garish Brennan in Dublin, Ireland, joining our group of 956 members. Our YouTube channel allows you to go and check out our most current show on the YouTube outlet at IRR, and you can go back and listen to previous shows there as well. And finally, you can join our X account at IRRCKUT and become one of our followers. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week. We will talk to you again next Sunday on CKUT with the International Radio Report. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. And here is Joe Adamoff to answer your questions. Dan Gendron of West Warwick, Rhode Island. Now that there is so much bad-mouthing about the combat troops in Cuba, and some people on Capitol Hill are saying they will withhold their ratification of SALT II, what will the leaders of the USSR do if these threats are carried out?
Well, first of all, one might think that the United States does not need peace, or that the Soviet Union needs peace much more than the United States does. You see, I'm saying this because we constantly hear that the Senate might not ratify SALT II, first for one reason, then for another reason, then for a third reason. You get the impression that somebody thinks they're doing us a favor by ratifying SALT II. One prominent American politician told me, "You have to understand this," he said. "This is part of our electioneering." Well, I want to ask, does electioneering come before the destiny of peace? What is more important, electioneering or peace, may I ask? Now you ask, what will our leaders do if it's not ratified? Well, first of all, I cannot imagine it not being ratified.
today.
You are listening to the Free Kick Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, CKUT.ca. Let's get it started.